everyone. I'd like to call the March 12, 2013 Senate Committee on Healthcare and Human Services to order. And we're going to remove Senate Bill 420. We don't have all the paperwork for it. That is the dense breast tissue bill. So we'll be moving that to whenever we get the paperwork. With that, I will open a work session on Senate Bill 470. Sandy, bring us up to date. Tom Burns, I'd like you to describe the amendments.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 470 requires additional information relating to the dispensing of prescription drugs to be reported to the Oregon Health Authority under the Prescription Drug Monitoring Program. And we have before us the dash ones, the dash threes, the dash sevens, and the dash eight that Mr. Burns will be referencing.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members, for the record, I'm Director of Pharmacy Programs for the Oregon Health Authority. The bill you have in front of you, after some thinking and talking to other people far smarter than me, they have come up with three suggested amendments, plus one that became apparent in our last hearing. The first one would expand the number of drugs covered for reporting. This would authorize the Board of Pharmacy to add drugs that are not scheduled drugs to the list of reporting drugs.
Correction, Mr. Burns, it doesn't expand. It allows the option for expansion.
Senator Cruz, you're absolutely right. It allows the option for expansion. The Board of Pharmacy would make these decisions. The Board of Pharmacy, I believe, has sent you all a letter identifying how they would do this through a full public process with the opportunity for public involvement. So that's the dash one. The dash threes would establish an automated system within the program to send notices to providers, alerts on issues that, based on an algorithm that the provider ought to be aware of. It would be, for example, if a patient reaches a threshold of 5 prescriptions for 5 controlled drugs from 5 different providers, perhaps it's time for somebody to pay attention to that, and so a notice might go to the providers. A patient is taking methadone in a high dosage, and suddenly benzodiazepine comes up on the screen. Both providers should be notified of that because that's a dangerous thing that should occur. So that's the dash threes. The dash sevens would allow licensed providers in Oregon, in Washington, Idaho, and California to access the system for Oregon residents only. So if you are a Oregon resident who goes across the river to the north or out to Boise or the Tri-Cities for your health care, your provider who is licensed in Washington and treats you could look at our system to see what kind of data is in our system that might be on you. And then the dash eights remove the source of payment. This was a concern that was expressed about why having studied this, agreed that we didn't have a good argument for why we needed source of payment. So the dash eights would remove the source of payment as one of the data points that we would be collecting.
And if I could, Mr. Burns, I would also point out that in the dash sevens, you will develop the protocols to make sure that it is completely protected.
I will do that.
Yes. Okay. Just trying to fill in. Okay.
Okay. We're in work session. Is there any discussion? Any more discussion?
Okay. I'm trying to move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 470.
Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendments into Senate Bill 470. Any discussion?
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead and move the amendment. And then I'll.
Any
discuss.
Opposition? Ordered.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 3 amendment into Senate Bill 470.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 3 amendments into Senate Bill 470. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 7 amendment into Senate Bill 470.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 7 amendments into Senate Bill 470. Any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move the dash 8 amendment into Senate Bill 470.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 8 amendments into Senate Bill 470. Any discussion? Any opposition? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill 470 as amended by the dash 1, the dash 3, the dash 7, and the dash 8 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves Senate Bill 470 as amended with the 1s, 3s, 7s, and 8s to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Yes, Senator Shields.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In prior sessions, I was a strong supporter for Senate Bill 355, mostly because I wanted to get in the way of the potential enabling of people to remain in their addictions. I think that with this new bill, I have some concerns that we're getting beyond just creating some red flags for providers to encourage them to have discussions with their patients. And I think we're moving farther down the road of, you know, creating a kind of electronic medical health record, which was never my intention, at least, when I voted for Senate Bill 355. So I will be a no vote here and on the floor.
Thank you. Is there any other further discussion?
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Speaking with my physician hat on, I appreciate Senator Shields' concerns and would say that we do have to be careful about this. My sense is that this is not anywhere close at this point, in my personal opinion, and I certainly respect Senator Shields' perspective, to being equivalent. I see this as an adjunct to that. It will allow me to help provide optimal care, especially when I think about my work as an urgent care provider, when I don't have a continuity relationship with patients or we're seeing patients who are seen at different practices. I think this is a very important resource, and I agree that we need to add in some of the other drugs that have the potential for misuse or abuse that aren't technically scheduled drugs. So I'm glad for that, and I apologize for being late, but I've had some other conversations about this.
Senator Cruz.
Yeah, I will save most of my comments for the floor, but I just want to remind committee members that one of the issues that was brought up when we did this originally was from physicians who are running pain clinics and their ability not to be able to have a level of certainty that they weren't dealing with drug shoppers and to be able to get the actual relief that those patients truly needed. And this was a tool that was going to be absolutely vital to them. I think with the protocols we have around this system, it is safe within the system, and I think this will be a tool that will be utilized to a very high degree by physicians for better health care outcomes.
Seeing no further discussion, the clerk will call the roll.
Senator
Hayward?
Aye. Senator
Knuth?
Aye.
Senator Shields?
Nope.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Mosley?
Aye. Motion carries, and Senator Cruz will carry the bill. With that, I will close the work session on Senate Bill 470 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 21. Sandy, bring us up to date.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 21 requires the Department of Human Services to develop a long-term care plan. It specifies the requirement for the development and implementation of the plan. It sunsets January 2, 2019, declares an emergency effective on passage. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Welcome. Introduce yourself and proceed.
Chair Mondes Anderson, members of the committee, for the record, Sean Colmer, Governor's Office. Thank you for having the first hearing of this bill, I hope, and hopefully we'll come back to you with another hearing as well. I'm here today just to really provide some context from where the governor is and what the governor has intended with Senate Bill 29 under the leadership of Erin and her team and the collaboration that's been happening with the stakeholders. So let me just take a moment there, then I'll pass it off to Erin to talk a little bit about the investments that were in the governor's budget around sort of this process and around working towards some redesign of the system or some evolution of the system. And then we also asked Rick to join us as well, as one of those key stakeholders that we've been talking with over the last couple of months and a couple of weeks. So as you all hopefully know, Oregon's long-term care system is the envy of the nation in most regards. I don't think anybody would dispute that. Sort of with that said, just like we're doing around education, around healthcare, around early learning, that doesn't mean we shouldn't stop thinking and talking and having conversations about how we do better, how we anticipate some of the challenges that we're going to see with changing demographics and the like, to make sure that our long-term care system can continue to be the envy of the national community. Senate Bill 21 sort of intends to sort of honor that commitment to have a clear and deliberate planning process led by Erin and her team with stakeholders to work through the interim and then bring back to you all for legislative approval the direction that it recommends, whatever that might be. So again, for those of you who have been around a while, very similar to what we did around healthcare transformation. So again, be very deliberate about what we want to do. That's the intention. With that said, DHS and Erin and her team have been working over the last couple of months with stakeholders to try to get to a point where we could bring a bill to you that had consensus, and unfortunately we're not quite at that place yet. I think we can get there over the next couple of days, and I've had some commitments from other stakeholders to do that. So I think we can, but just wanted to sort of place the context there and the governor's intention on this bill, and then pass it off to Erin and be happy to answer any more questions you might have. Thank you, Chair.
Chair Mona Sanderson, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Erin Kelly Seal, and I'm the director of the Department of Human Services. I know that many of those behind me will attest to the fact that Oregon is incredibly proud to be a leader in our delivery of long-term care services and supports. And I think from at least the department's perspective, we didn't achieve that leadership position waiting for bad things to happen. We did that by anticipating future needs, talking with our consumers, and thinking outside the box in terms of solutions. That was what led to the first waiver in the country in 1981 around long-term care services and supports that allows Oregonians to receive Medicaid, receiving Medicaid, to choose services in their own home and in community-based settings as opposed to in a nursing facility. And today, because of that action 30 years ago, 84% of those who are receiving Medicaid-supported long-term care services receive those services at home or in their communities. We're very proud of that. We're also proud of the fact that only 4% of Oregonians over the age of 65 currently depend on Medicaid to support financially their long-term care services and supports. And now the rest of the country is looking at Oregon trying to accomplish what we have already accomplished, which is fantastic. We need to take time to celebrate that, and we do. And at the same time, we are mindful of the fact that we are living in a new economy. There are about 630 on average seniors and people with disabilities who monthly qualify for public assistance in the state right now. And we also know that our 65 plus population is projected to nearly double by 2030. We have a lot of work to do if we want to stay at the head of the line, and that's really what Senate Bill 21 is intending to lay out. We've done work. We constantly work. We have a continuous improvement mindset within the organization, and I know with our partners and stakeholders at our side, really working on addressing issues and concerns that are coming up in our long-term care system. But I think that this is really a critical time, given some of those dynamics, and also given what's happening in the healthcare delivery system, and that's been a significant focus following some budget notes that the legislature gave to the department last session. In line with those budget notes, the governor's budget does include strategic investments and thinking now about how to continue to advance our long-term care services and supports, improving their quality, and beginning to address some of the gaps that we see in the system today. That includes things like enhancing investment in preventive services, strategies to increase in-home and community-based care services, particularly around some high-need populations, investments that are going to improve quality and safety, and also resources to encourage better collaboration with the transformed healthcare system and promote innovation focusing on improving quality and reducing costs. We're extraordinarily mindful of the fact that we need our stakeholders to be working with us in this effort. Over the course of this last interim, around this conversation, We have had a very transparent and inclusive process that included over 900 Oregonians across the state in town hall meetings, et cetera. 80% of those Oregonians that we engaged in that conversation say that we're on track with our thinking around how we need to move this discussion forward. And 76% of them said it's important to act now to anticipate the needs of the future and to be able to get it right in a thoughtful and planful way. So we're thankful to the committee for their attention to this piece of legislation. We look forward to working with the stakeholders to get it into even better shape than we think it's in right now. And we need the legislature to engage with us on this every step of the way so that we can get it right and make sure we're following your policy direction as we move forward. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Rick Bennett, Director of Government Relations for AARP Oregon. As explained, we have been working with the governor's office and the agency on this legislation. There's been a number of conversations and presentations over the last few months that frankly have raised some significant concerns for stakeholders. And we've expressed those concerns, some of which were addressed by the Dash 1 amendment that I believe you have, but still left some significant concerns to be worked out. AARP and some partners submitted a Dash 2 amendment, which I believe has just come back from council, but I believe that the governor's office and the agency may have some concerns about that amendment. So I think we'd like a little more time to see if we can reconcile these differences. I must tell you, anticipating this hearing and the fact that we wouldn't be able to reconcile our differences, I spent several hours working on my testimony that would be in opposition to the bill. I must tell you, I thought it was really stellar testimony. Hard-hitting, a little whimsy. I included a joke about three animals going into a bar. And some very complimentary things for the governor related to his initiative investment package as well. But I just as soon put that testimony on the shelf and be able to come back to you again, all of us supporting a compromise piece of legislation. And so we certainly appreciate your patience and your understanding, Madam Chair. And like I said, I hope we can come back very soon in agreement. Thank you.
Okay. Just to go over the Dash 1s, I sort of would like to know what's in the bills now and then go over the Dash 2s and then... Pardon? Mm-hmm. The Department of Human Services shall develop a plan, okay, and strengthen our publicly funded long-term care system. And then the bullets underneath it are pretty straightforward. Now, these are the Dash 1s, and the Dash 1s came from the agency.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
Strategies to serve seniors and people with disabilities in their own homes and community settings of their own choosing. Strategies designed to support independence and delay the entry of individuals into publicly funded long-term care. Strategies to serve individuals equitably in a culturally and linguistically responsive manner. Strategies to ensure that individuals currently served in publicly funded long-term care are exempted or transitioned without the loss of benefits in any new initiatives proposed, and strategies to use Medicaid demonstration projects to provide the greatest flexibility under federal requirements to administer long-term care. Any comments, Aaron, on that section, and then we'll go to section two.
Chairman Sanderson, I guess my comment would be this, that in the course of conversation with the stakeholders, I think the department has been really transparent about what boundaries we would like to put around this conversation, but also our intent has been not to predetermine its outcome. So we've put strategies and thinking on the table, which, as Rick mentioned, folks have some concerns about, but I don't think it's ever been our intent in the legislation to implement those strategies without that full stakeholder process that this planning bill contemplates. So part of our conversation has been about this is a bill that's intended to set in motion additional conversations where those disagreements and differences can be sorted out and where we would come back to the legislature within this framework and these parameters with some specific recommendations for you about next steps.
All right. I still want to put on the record section two, assist in developing the plan. They shall convene a planning committee that includes representatives of all key stakeholders, including consumers, providers and consumer and provider groups representing seniors and people with disabilities. And then there's going to be public hearings in regions throughout the state. And after considering the input from these public hearings, they will finalize the plan. And there will be a written report presented to the legislature. Is that basically what Section 2 then says?
Chair Moniz-Anderson, yes. And I think in addition, the department is charged. Oh, you're just on. Okay. The department is charged to actually also bring forward to you very explicitly in Section 2, Subsection 4, any legislative changes that would be required to implement the plan. So more than just a planning document or a study, the idea would be to bring back an action-oriented framework that you could act on, not that you had to act on it immediately, but it would lay out a sequence of strategies and action steps that could go forward into future years.
So this is the framework that would come before us in 2014.
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Yes, Senator Knope.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of questions. And so when I was serving in the House and served on health care, one of the programs that we really liked and funded was Oregon Project Independence. And I know it's a I think the governor has funded some of that in his budget. He used to cut it, and so I like the new governor better than the old governor. But I also did a lot of work on long-term care, and it sounded like Erin was suggesting that there was a group of stakeholders that were going to get together and that she wanted legislative input. And I would be happy to provide some legislative input based on the work that I've done in past sessions on long-term care issues. Because I heard, I think everybody up there say that we have an incredibly good system. And lots of times when we have incredibly good systems and that they're the envy of the nation and that government gets involved, they get screwed up. And sometimes we just need to encourage them to keep doing what they're doing or encourage them to, encourage us to fully fund Oregon Project Independence. So I just wanted to put that on the record and say, Madam Chair, that although I've avoided a lot of work groups over the past few weeks, I would be willing to consider helping out in this regard.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, may I ask a question of Ms. Kelly Seal? Thank you. I just came from the Human Services Subcommittee of the Ways and Means. And we were hearing from the Commission on the Blind for the Blind today, which in many ways has some overlap with some of the long-term care issues that you're addressing here, in the sense that they were talking about older Oregonians who become visually impaired or blind as a result of macular degeneration or some of the other effects that we have, and talking about the work that the Commission does to enable these senior citizens to stay in their own homes and remain independent, in part because of an increase in availability in technology. And I don't see a specific comment in either the original language or the dash ones or the dash twos, but I would hope that once we get to the place of figuring out a plan that everybody can agree on, that we would be thinking very creatively about, you know, there's new sensors that we can use that we can tell if somebody's having a problem, and that can be monitored remotely, which is less expensive than having someone in a facility but still keeps them independent. I'm not trying to be all 1984-ish about this, but I do think that, you know, were I a blind 70-year-old person, I would rather still be able to stay in my own home, even with some monitoring, than have to be living somewhere where somebody's watching me in person 24 hours a day. So I hope that wherever we go with this, that the discussions talk about, I mean, this is one of the places where I do think we can be thinking proactively without messing up a system that's working well, about ways to use new technology effectively to increase independence, because ultimately that will respect people's autonomy more and probably be less expensive for the state.
Okay, thank you.
Just a comment more than anything else.
All right, and then what the dash twos, which I think came from some stakeholders. Yes. Basically, Section 1 of the Dash 2 say that the Department of Human Services shall gather research data and information with a number of subsets on what kind of information that they should gather, and then they shall analyze each factor by care setting, population, and patient age, and then the department shall use the information to develop a plan for identifying the medical assistance recipients who need long-term care. And then they want the department to develop strategies to work with coordinated care organizations and Medicare Advantage plans to improve care, to expand access to respite care for in-home care providers and caregiving relatives, and to address the needs for short-stay respite care, for the development and greater utilization of adult day center services, to establish a comprehensive system of medication monitoring and health management, and for tracking and measuring inappropriate or avoidable inpatient and emergency department hospital utilization by individuals receiving the care. So that's Section 1. Do you want to comment, Rick, on any of what you have and what that would be different?
Just generally, if I were to describe both concerns of stakeholders in the Dash 1 and Dash 2 amendments, I think it really comes down to how broad or narrow the planning will be. And secondly, the timeline for that planning to occur, and then finally, what will constitute approval by the legislature.
Madam
Chair. Yes, Senator Steiner Hayward.
Mr. Bennett, if you could help me understand, I appreciate your concern about having the scope be too broad, and I do think we want to avoid mission creep. On the other hand, one of the things that I like better at the moment about the Dash 1s and the Dash 2s is that they're focused not just on seniors who are on medical assistance programs or qualify for such programs, but all seniors. And to my mind, one of the things that I would hope would come out of this are ways to identify people who with some help could remain independent, productive, and not needing as much public assistance, but rather than simply focusing on the people who are needing or qualifying for medical assistance programs and therefore are automatically entitled to certain services. Because I think that we've been kind of in this black and white, either you're in or you're out situation for a long time. And what I see in many ways about how we're thinking about human services delivery and medical assistance is that we're trying to move more into shades of gray, where we recognize, you know, it's kind of like the pre-TANF programs that we've been identifying, some little bits of assistance that will help bridge people over to keep them from needing to go on TANF or needing Section 8 housing or needing any of the other kinds of more aggressive interventions and expensive interventions, frankly. So can you help me understand why you think that at this point narrowing it to people who are already needing medical assistance or qualifying makes the most sense? I'm not disagreeing with this. I just need to understand it better.
Well, actually, first let me say that, you know, considerable amount of planning has been done in the past, including most recently the budget note report that you received in February or January 2012, which was based on a budget note in the bill number, but in 2011. And I think if you looked at that report and looked at the Dash 2 amendments, you would see that we believe that that's the amendment is actually building on the recommendations that were already included in that report, and which, in fact, it appears that the governor's planning initiative or investment package also seems to be based on to some extent. And so in our mind, one, we're trying to build on the foundation of planning that's already occurred, and the recommendations are a part of that. Also, I would say that if you look at the amendments, you'll see that there are several bulleted items there related to services that we would be going beyond just the Medicaid population to the general population as access to respite care, adult daycare, and so forth. I mean, we have been and continue to be very supportive of a number of options related to supports and preventative measures for caregivers and their family members.
Okay. The second part of your amendment is addressing what you just said. You wanted the planning definitely be a public process in consultation with advisory groups, and then you listed those that you felt needed to be at the table, yeah. Correct?
Yes. All right. And again, like I say, I think I'm hopeful, as I've indicated to you, Madam Chair, in the past, we are very hopeful that we can come to an understanding, some common ground here that we can all support, and we continue to work towards that if possible.
Thank you. I appreciate that. There's no one else signed up for this bill, and I would like to appoint, and I want an amendment by the end of the week. So I am putting Senator Steiner Hayward and Senator Cruz to coordinate this effort, and they will contact, you will coordinate and then get the group together and hammer out an amendment that will be, that we will be able to take forward into work session.
You want an amendment by the end of this week, Madam Chair?
Mm-hmm. I would like.
Okie dokie.
We're getting close to the end, and so at least have the amendment submitted.
Okay.
We may not actually have it in hand, but we need to have it. Okay? Is there any other discussion? All right. Well, this was
Can I make a request, actually, Madam Chair? Just to make it a little bit easier for me, since I think my staff person, Alana, is going to be the person trying to pull everybody together really, really quickly. Would you be kind enough, Mr. Bennett, to go ahead and submit your written things because it'll help me to read it ahead of time? And Ms. Kelly Seal, just because I'm an old legislator who has trouble finding things, would you be kind enough to submit that report that Mr. Bennett referred to be added into the exhibits on this bill just because it'll have everything in one place? Thank you very much.
All right. Seeing no further discussion, I will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 21, and we're adjourned.